The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
The word subsistence is used to describe a broad range of activities on land and water that aim to help people sustain their families and traditions for living a life off the land. Indigenous people have used these practices for thousands of years. Federal law codified priority protections for rural subsistence in 1980, but now the federal government is reviewing the subsistence management program, and changes could be coming. What could that mean for life in remote communities? We'll talk about the review and how you can be heard in the process today on Talk of Alaska.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, on Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Please forgive me, I have a bit of a cold, so I might, hopefully I'll sound clear enough for everyone today. For Alaska natives and other folks living in remote regions of the state, the ability to harvest fish, wildlife, berries, and plants is essential to being able to live in a region where grocery store food is limited, expensive, and often not fresh. It is a way of living that requires training passed from one generation to the next. Sport and recreational hunters, berry pickers, and fishermen also pass along traditions in their families. And in Alaska, the state constitution says all of those resource users are equal. But the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, ANILCA's Title VIII, specifies a rural resident priority for fish, wildlife, and other resources over commercial or sport and recreational use in times of shortage. As fisheries, caribou herds, and other wild foods experience declines in population, shortage has become more common. Because of the disconnect between the state's constitution and federal law, 60% of land in Alaska is under federal management, putting some urban Alaskan hunters at odds with rural residents for access to fish and wildlife. Now the federal government has decided to review the subsistence program. The rural subsistence priority is for all rural residents, not just Alaska Native people. The review is taking public comment now and has extended the comment period until March 30th. Some Alaskans, such as one of our guests today, want the state to manage all resources in Alaska. We'll learn more about why during the program. And some rural residents would prefer the federal government continue to manage federal land use. My guests are Ben Malott. Ben is the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, AFN. Also on the line is John Sturgeon. John is the past president of the Alaska chapter of Safari Club International and is now the chair of the Government Affairs Committee for SCI Alaska Safari Club. Also with us is Ben Mulligan. Ben is the Deputy Commissioner of the State Department of Fish and Game. Ben is with us for the first half of today's program at 10:30. We'll be joined by Karen Linnell. Karen is the Executive Director of the Otna Intertribal Resource Commission. So welcome all of you. Thanks for being on hand. And Alaskans, you can also join our discussion. Are you a rural resident concerned about the future of rural subsistence protections? Are you an avid hunter or fisherman who lives in one of the state's urban centers and is advocating for changes to how resources are managed here? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. All right, John Sturgeon, I want to start with you. When did the Safari Club ask the federal government to review the subsistence program, and why? What is SCI seeking to change?
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. It all started, I think, when President Trump, on his first day in office, issued something called the Make Alaska Great. It's an executive order. And in that executive order was a section directing his administration to review the federal subsistence program. Also, the Secretary of the Interior also sent out after that another executive order basically saying the same thing. And because of that, the Safari Club thought maybe there should be some changes to the Federal Assistance Board, the way they operate. And so we submitted something called a petition for rulemaking. That's kind of a formal process where if you want to make changes to regulations or a program, you submit this petition to the federal government and they review it. They can accept it. They can read it. They can not read it. They decided to include it in what they call a scoping period. A scoping document is simply a time when they have some suggestions and they ask people what your opinions are on those suggestions. That review period has just been extended till the end of March, which we thought was a good deal. After that, the federal government will consider all the input they've gotten. And they may or may not submit some proposed changes, proposed regulatory changes. If they do, then there's going to be another comment period where people can actually comment on those regulations. After that period, I'm not sure how long that's going to be. It's up to the federal government. It may be short, maybe long. But after that, then the federal government will decide if they want to send out or make those proposed changes into law, and then they're put in the Federal Register to become law, and they're regulatory changes. So the Safari Club had actually five changes we suggested, and I think it's pretty important to say what we don't have a problem with. One is that we're not asking to get rid of the Federal Subsistence Board. We support the rural preference. There's no question about that. We just think that it needs to be, some things need to be clarified. One of the things is that we can kind of put it in a nutshell. What we're looking for is we want the Federal Subsistence Board to follow Title VIII of ANILCA as written, and then we want science to be put in the process. We think that, and that's done by having the Alaska Department of Fish and Game given due deference in the decisions that they make. And we're not asking for Fish and Game to take over subsistence. We're not asking Fish and Game to be put on the Federal Subsistence Board. We're asking that they be given legitimate and meaningful deference when decisions are made on wildlife. But wildlife absolutely has to come first, whether you're a subsistence person in a rural area or you're in a city. The protection and sustainability of the wildlife has to come first. And that is one of Safari Club's number one priorities, is to make sure that all the decisions by the Federal Subsistence Board are based on science, not on politics.
All right, John, thanks for starting us off there. You have said that Safari Club International is not anti-subsistence. You just relayed that again today.
Yes.
The federal mandate only applies in times of shortage. Now, arguably, shortage is more frequent. But make your case for SCI's request not being anti-rural user.
Well, I think that if you look at the petition we put in for, we make it clear that we have no problem. We're not making any changes that are going to change that rural subsistence priority. We're asking that the board has grown to 11 members. We're asking that it goes back to the original five. Head of the agencies, and then the chairman, and then we're also asking that the decisions that the Federal Subsistence Board makes are based on science, that they give the Department of Fish and Game meaningful deference. That means they really have to listen to Fish and Game. It still doesn't take any authority away from the Federal Subsistence Board in any way at all. It just says they have to listen to them. We don't think that's been done in the past. We think they've pretty much ignored what Fish and Game has said. And you got to remember, Fish and Game is the one that does the surveys all over the state. They're the ones that come up with the allowable harvest levels. In other words, how many critters can you actually harvest without hurting the sustainability? That's what Fish and Game does. And it's like they do in every other state. The state agencies are the one that determine the wildlife manage the wildlife, determine what's what can be harvested, what can't be harvested. And there are times when there's enough of a harmful surplus that folks from the urban and rural areas both can hunt. And if that number gets too low, as determined by Alaska Fish and Game, then it's just rural. It's just the rural people that get to harvest the fish and game. And so we have absolutely no problem with a rural preference, as long as they follow the law in Title VIII and they use science to make sure that the wildlife resources absolutely come first. That's our biggest interest.
All right. Thank you. Ben Milot, I want to turn to you now as head of Alaska Federation of Natives. Talk about when you first heard about this current review of the subsistence management program. And then listening to John's opening comments, what are your thoughts about why it's happening now and what your concerns are about what could come out of it?
Thank you, Lori. And again, I'm happy to be here. I think my first time on your show, so it's an honor. One thing I want to clarify is that, you know, AFN is the state's largest Native organization. Our membership this year includes 196 federally recognized tribes. Those tribes are sovereign governments. They have a government-to-government relationship with the federal government. In rural Alaska, those are the governments in our rural communities. Also represent over 156 village corporations, 11 regional corporations, and 11 regional tribal nonprofits, or about 180,000 Alaska Natives through our membership. So when we talk about subsistence, it's not just about putting food in the freezer, going out and getting a moose because it's the season to do that. You know, we're talking about subsistence as really our customary and traditional ways of life. And that is 10,000 plus years of knowledge and adaptation and management passed on from generation to generation. For example, you know, my mother's from Rampart on the Yukon River. And it is something special to sit there and watch my mom and her sisters cut fish, smoke it, like they've learned from their grandmother and mothers and same exact for over thousands of years. And right now, my brother's nephews go to Rampart and they actually don't know that experience. They haven't seen that experience. They haven't smelt really what a smokehouse smells like. And again, to me, that is really what we're talking about here. It's really protecting our ways of life and not just putting protein in the fridge or going out and having a good time in the woods. For us, everything we are, who we are, is about our customary and traditional ways of life. So we talk about subsistence, it is a very, very legal term in Anilka, in Ainska, right? But really for us, there's a different meaning there of who we are as Native peoples. So when you talk about, you know, rural status determination, it was still a compromise. In 2024, AFN delegates passed Resolution 24-1, which has steps to kind of create a Native framework of subsistence. Right now, our only real protection is in federal law, in Anilka. Is that rural preference. The Federal Subsistence Board is tasked by, you know, by Secretaries of Interior and Agriculture to really mandate that rule. And in AFN's opinion, they are actually following the law. They are following Title VIII of Anilka. And the courts have proven that many, many times over. With that said, you know, this petition is also an opportunity for our membership to actually say what kind of system, what kind of management we want. And that is, you know, having those protections to really protect our ways of life and not just putting food in the fridge and whatnot. So with that said, the public seats on the Federal Assistance Board really goes back to good management and good governance. You actually have members who are those rural users at the table with the agencies. You actually have three seats nominated by tribes. The tribes are in large our local governments in rural Alaska. So for me, for AFN, the Federal Subsistence Board really is the closest thing we have to protecting our ways of life We believe Title 8 of ANILCA is being followed. The courts have proven that many times over. And really having who is, you know, our, you know, rural users at the table is really better governance. And so with that said, you know, AFN, you know, while petition rulemaking happens, is opportunity for us, also, our membership, to share what kind of management system we want. And part of that too is that we do recognize that this system does not work. For our communities, for our small tribes, it is very onerous and burdensome for our communities to go to Board of Fish, Board of Game, right? Those don't really have their more commercial interest and, you know, don't really have the subsistence rural determination that the federal system has. Also, I go FSB. We have, you know, 10 racks on the federal side, 84 on the state side. And if you're in one small community with this a small tribe, that is really, really burdensome. And, you know, we could be doing things better.
And I just want to let people know that when Ben is referring to RACs, that's Regional Advisory Councils.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And there are
Alaska's full of acronyms, and sometimes I forget that.
and just want to also remind our listeners that this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the current federal review of subsistence management in Alaska. On the line with us right now is AFN President Ben Malott. Also on the line is John Sturgeon, who is with the Safari Club International. He is the current chair of Government Affairs Committee. And Ben Mulligan is also on the line with us. Ben is the State Department of Fish and Game Deputy Commissioner. You can join our conversation statewide if you have questions or comments, concerns about this subsistence management review. Statewide, the number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Ben Mulligan, I want to turn to you now. There have been past attempts at amending the state constitution to align with the federal rural priority. What do state leaders say about why this has not happened? Why is there opposition to federal management on federal lands? Don't the feds manage federal lands in other states?
Well, good morning, Lori. Appreciate the time. I would say that the state is not against the federal subsistence program in its entirety. There are closures and restrictions on federal public land right now to hunting and fishing that we as the state do not automatically oppose. We recognize under ANILCA that, like you've said before, that you know, ANILCA provides for those restrictions to happen under conservation measures or for the continued subsistence use. And when the state feels that those are those reasons are being met, that the closure is warranted. Now, with that, we feel that over the years since the Federal Subsistence Board was created in 1992, they've gotten away from what we feel is the plain language of ANILCA by basically creating a dual management system. So you can have the exact same regulations on the federal side as the state side, methods and means, season, you name it. So what is the difference? The state is providing that opportunity the same as the feds. So there's really no difference in what we are providing for rural Alaskans, urban Alaskans to go out and hunt and fish. With that said, we do, like I said, we do recognize that when there are reasons to look at closures and restrictions, those proposals come up and we examine those. And if they are found to meet the provisions of ANILCA, we do not oppose those. We support those and those go through. But at times we don't feel that those measures meet that criteria and we do oppose them. For example, we had a series of closures happen in Unit 4 for Sitka blacktail deer down in Southeast. At the time that we were debating that those closures, Unit 4 has the highest deer population, has the best success rate for hunters harvesting deer in that game management unit. But instead, the Federal Subsistence Board chose to close those areas anyways. And so, you know, not with knowing that that area had some of the top deer hunting that you could have, we as the state now don't know when we'll ever see those closures lifted because we don't know the metrics in which they are going to measure success when we, as the state who are assessing those populations, collecting harvest information, see it be the best in the state.
And Ben, I wanted to back up just a bit and clarify when you had said that it created a dual management system. It wasn't the subsistence board that created that system, correct?
No, the state has created this dual management system. The state has, not come to compliance with ANILCA. This is not federal overreach. It's really the state hasn't come to compliance with ANILCA. AFN 90s and 2000s, we worked really hard with our state legislature to actually bring the state constitution, into compliance with a rural preference or a rural plus native preference, right, to kind of end this dual management. So this is actually the state not come to compliance has created this dual management. Oh, sorry, two Bens.
Yeah, no worries. And Ben Mulligan, turning back to you, people in rural Alaska have said they're concerned that the review process is a political process, that it's being driven by the petition from Safari Club International. What this makes people concerned about fairness and politics. What do the federal managers you work with say about what prompted this review at this time?
Lori, first, let me answer your first question, which came to back to dual management. And I meant by that is basically back when the Federal Subsistence Board was formed, they adopted almost entirely the state's hunting and fishing regulations for across the state. And so you had folks operate, so you had federal hunting regulations and fishing regulations that were exactly mirroring the state. In a lot of ways, that is still applicable today. And so that's why I say dual. There's a set of if folks at home or you yourself are familiar with what we call the handy dandy, it's our regulation books. There's ours, and then there's theirs, and they're about the same size. And in a lot of ways, so again, someone could be operating under one or the other. So that's why I say dual in that regard. As far as you're getting to then your second question, I think the petition was part of that impetus, but then also, as Mr. Sturgeon alluded to, was the executive order that called for a review of all Department of Interior programs. And then you saw the follow-up secretarial orders, which required those programs to submit information to him about their programs. And so we're seeing this as just them carrying out that process that they were given by the president and the secretary of the interior.
And so I wanted to throw this question out to all three of you. The Federal Subsistence Board, as we've been discussing, oversees management of the program. The board gets information from 10 regional advisory councils, RACs they're referred to. These advisory councils are made up of local people who provide observations about changes in habitat, population numbers. They make recommendations. They describe illness they find in animals they harvest. This is traditional knowledge and observational science. There are five federal regional directors from Fish and Wildlife, National Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Indian Affairs, and six rural public members and a board chair. Starting with you, Ben Mallott, do you think the board needs to change? And if so, how? And then, John Sturgeon, please follow up.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for clarifying, which Ben. I live in an office with three Nicoles and two Sarahs, so sometimes gotta clarify which one I'm talking to. Sorry, Ben, but again, I didn't mean to cut in there so abruptly. So back to the question, going back to, who's at the table? Who's at the table is critical, right? If not at the table, you're usually like the menu. And so for AFN, we've worked really hard to ensure that, those are actually living in rural Alaska are at the table with you know, the agencies make these decisions. And, you know, that creates a stronger system because you have those actually in the system. And then you also have, you know, the agencies, and the agencies do change, right? Every administration is going to have a different policy or perspective of management. So really, you want to take the politics out of the system is having a more even keeled board and government structure that includes many different voices.
Mm-hmm. And John Sturgeon, your thoughts. It sounds as if the Safari Club would like to see changes to the composition of how the board selects members.
Yes, I think we absolutely do. We, first of all, we don't think it's, we have not been able to find in the Title VIII or the regulations where the Secretary of the Interior can pass his authority of Title VIII onto a public member. He can pass it on to an employee, but not to a public member. And we've never quite got an answer to that yet. So we think it's probably not legally set up correctly. And we think that local knowledge is very, very important. But we also think that there should be the science should be front and center, and that's what Fish and Game provides. And one of the questions you asked earlier is that Fish and Game's in other states, they manage on all federal, state, and private lands. Alaska's unique because of Title VIII. They've carved out an exception, which we're fine with. It's a good reason for it. We think that, and also in Title VIII, there's also a section that says that the interests of the non-subsistence users must be considered when they make their decisions. It's actually in the statute. And we kind of see no way that happens. And if you got a board made up of all rural or heavily tilted towards folks in a rural area, the non-subsistence user don't have a voice. I'd like to have somebody tell me where that voice comes from. We have public testimony, of course, but they can ignore that, and oftentimes they do. So we think that that the board needs to be able to look at both sides of what the rural folks need, what the science says, what the folks in the rural areas, if they've got some customary and observations for what's happening out there. And then, again, also the science that the Department of Fish and Game provides. So that's why we're looking for a change. We want it to be based on science. We want to be based on what the law says. And if somebody can tell me where the law says that you can have public members, we couldn't find it.
And John, you've mentioned several times that you want decisions based on science. That makes sense. But there are five federal regional directors, Fish and Wildlife, National Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, Bureau of Indian Affairs. Aren't those entities bringing science to the table also?
Well, the science I'm talking about is the Fish and Game is the one that actually goes out there in the field and does the surveys. They to find out, they're the ones that find out what the health of the herds are. Which way the herds are trending, like caribou, for example, are they going up, they're going down, and how what's their numbers. They do annual surveys, like in the Arctic caribou herd. They track the rise and decline, and they're the ones that bring that data to the Federal Subsistence Board. That is not something that the federal agencies do. That's something that Alaska Department of Fish and Game does. They're the ones that provide, if you want to call it the science, the facts. They do the surveys. Occasionally you'll have a federal employee go with them, but as a general rule, they do all the surveys, and that's the science we're talking about. You have got to be, when you make a decision and you're going to determine how many animals can be harvested, you've got to know what the overall dynamics look like. You've got to know what the allowable surplus is for harvesting, and which way they're trending. And that's something that Fish and Game provides, and it's not something that the federal agencies normally do. Like I said, in every other state, the state governments, the state fish and game entities are the ones that manage fish and game on all different lands. And a great example is caribou. Caribou migrate, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles. And so how does a caribou know if he's on state land, federal land, private land? And so you've got to have someone that looks at the big picture. And that's exactly what the Department of Fish and Game does. And I think Mulligan can actually speak to that, but that's when we talk about science. That's what we're talking about. And the agencies federal agencies don't do that.
Okay, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the federal subsistence management program and the opportunity for folks to have their comments heard through this scoping and comment period that runs through March as Talk of Alaska continues.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today we're discussing the federal review of the subsistence management program in Alaska. On the line with us is AFN President Ben Malott and also John Sturgeon, who is with the Safari Club International. John is a past president of the Safari Club's Alaska chapter and is currently the chair of government affairs, of the Government Affairs Committee for Safari Club International. Joining us now is also Karen Linnell. Karen is the executive director of the Otna Intertribal Resource Commission, and she is a former member of the State Board of Fish and Game. Karen, thanks for joining us, and I want to remind our listeners that they can call in if they have questions or comments they'd like to raise during this second half of today's program. Our statewide number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. As Doug in Anchorage did, Doug says, my perspective is from Western and Interior Alaska. Rural preference should continue. There are not enough fish and wildlife to go around during times of shortage, which is now for many fish and wildlife species around the state. So subsistence preference should go to those who are most dependent on wild resources, which includes both native and non-native rural residents. Dual management is unnecessarily confusing and expensive. The state of Alaska should get on board. That was a note from Doug in Anchorage. So, Karen, as I said, you're the executive director of the Otna Intertribal Resource Commission. When we spoke yesterday, you noted that the subsistence program has been reviewed in past decades. What came out of those reviews, and what concerns you, Karen, about this current review?
Well, in the last review, happened in 2010, and the finding was that the FSB is not knowledgeable and responsive to rural needs because subsistence users are underrepresented on the FSB. And in 2011, they expanded the board to include two public members that ended up being Rhonda Pitka and Charlie Brower, with the chair, Tony Christensen. And again, Ben Malott said that, you know, the agency regional directors come and go. They don't have a connection to Alaska. A lot of them come to Alaska for the first time and are, when they get appointed as regional director, they aren't familiar with ANILCA, and the rural priority. We spend a lot of time educating them and re-educating them and talking through what it means to have to be a manager for subsistence. And then the other thing that was on there, you can find it on the website, if you Google federal subsistence review, it's on the Department of Interior's Federal Subsistence Board page. It has the history of federal management. Going back to 1992, there was a lot of things that are happening, and I can, you know, they want to go back to the start of something. Well, it was brand new. It's still, you know, was There's a lot of state influence, and that was one of the findings that they had. And that the, you know, Mr. Sturgeon brings up that the state does do the monitoring. Well, some of that monitoring and a lot of that monitoring is subsidized by funding from the federal agencies. There's no point in double, you know, doing the job twice, trying to be efficient. They do meet. They do have input in the federal proposal review with the interagency staff committee, which Mr. Mulligan participates in or used to before his advancement within the department, and others of his staff. So they do talk about the health of the populations, and those are put into the board's packet and for review. There's been a lot of concern of late about management of caribou herds and salmon. And with three herds crashing and no fishing on the Yukon, now 5-6 years going in, still a longer time to come, trying to get the populations to improve.
Right. And so, Karen, can I, I want to just ask you a question here, and then we want to bring on a caller. AFN is looking to state lawmakers to amend the Constitution and asking federal managers to consider amending the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA, seeking to repeal the section that extinguished Alaska Native hunting and fishing rights and add a new framework to give tribes control over hunting and fishing on Native lands. Do you support that type of amendment?
Yeah, you know, an amendment to ANCSA would be ideal. And unlike other treaties in the lower 48, there were modifications made to ANCSA in the 11th hour, and compromises made by our late senator and congressman to try and get this passed. And there was a promise made that, and it's in the congressional record, that they expect that the Secretary of Interior and the state, the governor, will address the subsistence for the Native people. And that was in ANCSA, in the congressional record. So here we are, over 50 years later, still trying to get hunting and protect our hunting and fishing rights.
And so let me ask you this. If you do, you indicated that you would support an amendment to ANCSA that would seek a framework to give tribes more control over hunting and fishing on Native lands. What is reasonable in your mind for cooperative management of the resources across Alaska lands for all users? As we know, fish and wildlife don't have borders. So how do you see this working so that the migrating herds and fish that swim through state, federal, tribal waters, how would that work?
You know, I've sat in on a fish and wildlife meeting for it with the Salish Kootenai federal agency and the state. They work together and come up with the regulations. They work together on bag limits and things. And they also are cross-deputized. So they issue citations. They sell or each other's permits and or register folks. It can be done. And that's just one that I've looked at.
Okay.
We've seen co-management with marine mammals. We've seen co-management with Alaska migratory birds. You know, we've seen it work.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones for a moment. Matt is in Yakutat. Hello. Matt?
Yeah. Hi, Lori.
Hello. You're on air.
All right, thank you. Yeah, you know, I was listening to the conversation, and I was hearing about John Sturgeon once again talking about how the state is the one that provides all the data. You know, that I understand it. The state does great work. You know, I appreciate them going out and doing their survey work. But, you know, there is frequent gaps in their data. And these gaps are, they're huge. Alaska is an enormous state. We often face weather, snow conditions, you know, canceled surveys because of this. And this is why we need folks on our RAC that live in these communities, folks that are on the ground seeing in real time. Our traditional ecological knowledge, our on-the-ground observations fill in those gaps. This is why it's important to have the makeup that we do on this council. And, you know, you look at the situation that we're in right now in Yakutat. We are now 7 weeks with no barge because of weather. Now, this is 100% a reason why we need the makeup that we have on there. So we have folks in a position to help make these choices and these decisions that affect all of us in these communities who face shortages like this. In 7 weeks, our shelves get pretty bare. And, you know, if we have to start flying in groceries, it gets even more expensive to live here. You know, I have a hard time trying to get this point across, but maybe I'll try again. We are doing subsistence harvesting for survival, not because we want to go have fun, not because we enjoy going out. We are doing this because this is the only way that we can afford to live in these communities.
All right. Thank you, Matt, for your comments from Yakutat. Matt is the subsistence or the sovereignty food coordinator for Yakutat. And John, I want to turn back to you now. After hearing these things from both Karen and Matt's comments, do you see areas where compromise is possible for the future of resource use and management, a path to a reasonable resolve here that folks could be comfortable with?
I would hope so. I think I've worked with the Native community for my entire career, and they're great people and they're great compromisers, and I'm sure we can come up with something. What Matt said, that's the purpose of Title VIII of ANILCA, is to provide food for those communities like Yakutat in times of need and times of shortages. Again, we don't have any problem with that at all. If I could like to maybe correct or just maybe clarify one thing that my esteemed colleague, Ms. Nunnell, talked about, is the federal government paying for the fish and game. State Fish and Game is funded almost entirely on receipts that they receive from hunting and fishing licenses. And the federal money, I think that Ms. Nunnell is talking about, is something called the Pittman-Robertson money, which Fish and Game matches, or the federal government matches 3-1. But that money all comes from Pittman-Robertson money, all comes from the sale of fishing tackle, hunting equipment, that kind of thing. So it's something that the fishermen and hunters across America actually pay for. So I just want to clarify that. I think that's what Ms. Nunnell was talking about.
All right.
No, sir.
Oh.
No, sir.
Go ahead, Karen.
In working with our local agencies here, they do provide small, and it's not enough to pay for the entire survey, but they do supplement surveys with their budgets, both BLM, National Park Service, and probably U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I'm not certain on that one, but I do know that with BLM and the Park Service, they do provide some funding to help with survey costs and or personnel.
All right.
Thank you, Karen.
We do need to take another break. We'll be back in about 1 minute, and Talk of Alaska will continue our discussion on the Federal Subsistence Management Program review. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the federal review of subsistence management with AFN President Ben Mallott. with John Sturgeon, who is the Safari Club International's Chair of Government Affairs, and with Karen Linnell, the Executive Director of ATNA Intertribal Resource Commission and a former member of the State Board of Fish and Game. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255 if you have questions or comments. 1-800-478-8255. If you are in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. As Chris in Homer did, he says, my experience is hunting, fishing, trapping, including commercial fishing for 43 years. My opinion is the Board of Game and Board of Fish are political entities. The local advisory committees are often loaded with special interest board members. Very often the boards will vote against ADFG's, NG's biological recommendations for management proposals. In the same respect, the local advisory committees and the Board of Game and Board of Fish will vote against a majority of comments pertaining to certain proposals. He says, I recently saw a Safari International sign on a trail here in bold letters that says Hunters First, right below where it says International. These multi-million dollar international organizations control government decisions that we locals have to live by. I am not Alaska Native. I completely support local subsistence rights. Thanks for a great show, Chris in Homer. John, do you want to respond to Chris's comments saying that Safari Club International has too much political sway?
Well, I sure don't think so. I spend a lot of time. I don't get paid anything. I'm 100% volunteer. And I'm passionate about hunting and fishing, the same as the folks in the rural area are. And we want to make sure that the rights that we have are protected. Once again, I have no problem with a rural preference. But as I said before, ANILCA carved out there's an actual section in ANILCA that says that the non-subsistence users should not unnecessarily be impacted. And again, we don't see where we're being listened to. And I think we're inputting into the process the same as anybody else. Anybody else can submit something. And that's what Safari Club did. And we're going through a scoping process. And if they agree with what we propose, whatever they come up with, there's going to be another series of hearings on any proposals. So it's a long, long democratic process where everybody gets their say. And again, we are not against the rural preference.
Okay.
We just want to follow the law, and we want Fish and Game to have a legitimate, meaningful deference.
Ben Ballot, I want to turn back to you. AFN, Alaska Federation of Natives, as we mentioned earlier, is asking state lawmakers to fix this impasse by amending the state constitution to align with the federal rural priority mandate. Are you gaining any traction with this request? There's been past attempts. It hasn't prevailed. Are you talking to lawmakers now, and is someone willing to take this forward?
Thank you, Lori. That's a really good question. And I just want to recognize that, you know, with John, we both recognize that this system is not working for our communities or state. You know, fish don't care about boundaries, moose don't care about boundaries, but what we have here is a public policy, like, super problem of definitions and geographical areas and organizations. So it's a really, really difficult system to change. And what AFN's doing, you know, partly is because opportunity favors the prepared mind, right? We're starting to educate that process and really setting expectations that, you know, this is a really long journey to get a state constitution amendment passed that works for our communities, that does recognize that's not only rural, but we need to have a frame that works for our native communities, not only rural Alaskans, that we're all in this together. That protects, as you know, Matt said, our survival. It also, you know, recognizes our ways of life. Just because, you know, your tribe or community happens to be near an urban location doesn't mean that you can't still have or should have the ability to harvest and, you know, have that customary traditional ways of life that your people have had for 10,000 plus years. So what we're doing at AFN is really starting to, you know, set that stage. And, you know, really start to build that momentum.
And AFN is also seeking to amend ANCSA, to gain support from state lawmakers, how challenging will the lack of historical context be? Many lawmakers now were kids when ANCSA was passed.
Yeah.
And especially now when there are some really urgent issues facing the state. Do you think you can get traction with this request at this time?
I think there is. You know, this is a solution that requires all voices input. You know, AFN, we can't do it alone. I'm so thankful that President Kitka was still here when HR 22 came up, because she was able to step in with her knowledge, because last time we talked about that, I was still in high school, I think, or actually middle school. So it's been a long time since we've talked about this. And also what AFN is putting out there is more of a menu of options. Each option is going to be discussed by our community. And some options may be a no-go, some options may be an absolute need, but also recognizing that, you know, to change the Constitution, then go into a ballot initiative, that takes a long time, a lot of preparation. We can't just run into this, you know, real fast. Also changing in ANILCA, amending ANSCA, you know, ANSCA has been amended many times. So it's a living document. So is ANILCA. But that also requires a lot of strategy and discussion to make sure that we're doing it right, because we don't want to change the system and then have another 50 years to try and change it again to make it work for our communities, because it's not working for our communities.
So, so Karen, turning to you, and then I want to hear from Mr. Sturgeon as well. Is it possible the review could change things for the better for rural users? The Katie John decisions were reviewed by the U.S. Supreme Court recently and reaffirmed the federal government's authority for rural preference. Could this review be a positive step for rural users? Karen, your thoughts. Do you think that's a potential outcome? Do you prefer federal management to continue? And if so, what gives you confidence about federal government rather than state leadership?
Right now, I think that we're seeing exploitation of Alaska resources and not to the benefit of Alaskan residents as a whole, right? And being able to have healthy populations. I don't want to fight with John. I don't want to fight with anybody over the last salmon, the last moose, the last caribou. We need to do what we can to protect those resources so that we have healthy populations and that don't get us into a federal closure opportunity, you know, situation, right? Closure of federal lands to non-federally qualified users. Mm-hmm. It's a mouthful, but we need to work together to do that. And when I talk with John or other folks at Safari Club or Alaska Professional Hunters Association and things like that, we're not that far off from each other. Mm-hmm. We just need to look for that common ground and start doing what's best for the resources. We can work together to make it better. And we have to look for those opportunities. This federal review might be just the thing to get me and John talking on the same page to move forward, right? And I think some of that happened when we had the open house a couple of weeks ago, to where we could talk about different things and say, okay, we're not too far off from each other here. Let's look for that. And how can we work together to improve things?
All right. And John, in about a minute, your thoughts here. Do you think the subsistence board should be dissolved and management should just be under state authority in Alaska?
No, I don't. And if I could repeat exactly what Karen just said, I would agree with that 100%. Karen's right on. Very well done, Karen. Well spoken. I think one of the things that as far as making sure we have enough wildlife, I think one of the things that I think the state brings to the table, the state believes in intensive management, which a lot of people call predator control. They believe in habitat manipulation, like doing controlled burns or crushing of that kind of thing, where the federal government is a little, in many cases, opposed to it. The federal government, a lot of times, believes in what we call maximum biodiversity. The state of Alaska manages maximum sustained yield. So Karen's right. I think we have a lot more in common than we do against each other. We both want to see very large wildlife populations. We want to see everybody have a chance. If there's a shortage, rural folks should definitely get the first crack at it. But I think there's a lot that we have in common, and maybe this will bring the discussion together, the groups, and we can come up with something that works for everybody.
And Mr. Malott, in about 30 seconds here before we wrap up, your thoughts?
I just want to thank John and Karen. You know, these are very intense topics. And with AFN, with John and Karen, we shouldn't be against each other. We need to be creating a management that works for our communities. And also with that said, co-management management. We should be building our own rural biologist to manage our resources. So I think, you know, there's opportunities to work together. I think, you know, it's going to take time and just saying hello and having that compromise and being good neighbors. So good sheesh, Lori. Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, thank you so much to our guests today as we discuss the federal review of subsistence management. That comment period, scoping period, is still open until March 30th. So Alaskans can continue having their voices heard in this process. Thanks to our guests, AFN President Ben Malott, John Sturgeon with the Safari Club International, and Karen Linnell, the Executive Director of Otna Intertribal Resource Commission. Earlier in the show, we heard from State Department of Fish and Game Deputy Commissioner Ben Mulligan. Thanks to our engineer, Crystal Hyde, on the board. Our producer and editor is Annie Feit. And on the phones, Ava White helped us out today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.